Morning, honorable members. The GMRE and the members of the media who might be present and those interested in today's meeting. I'm trying to check the it seems to be me, Honorable Malinga, two, Honorable Matogwe, three, Honorable Mahlaule, four, or Honorable Mailam, five. Yes, we are enough to continue with the meeting. What probably is, if we are compelled to take decisions, we will have to get an extra one member. But for procedure to follow, to continue, yes, we do. Without any further delays, can I get any apologies?
Good morning, Chair and the members and our guests. I've got the following apologies. Honorable Langa is not coming to the meeting today, and also Honorable Zungula. That's the two apologies I received, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Boss. Let me welcome the department. Advocate DG Mukwena Mall.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Okay. Thank you very much. Before we go to your presentation, I'm not preempting you, DG. I'm just requesting from you. Just for courtesy's sake, I'm very worried. Let me say this is my observation, and I've been trying to check whether we have sent or we have done something that we don't know, we didn't explain. You will bear with me, and if I'm wrong, you can tell me. The reason I'm raising this thing is that it might be preemptive, and I've got no intention to preempt your presentation, but it might help probably for future references. I'm afraid, because last time we were here, it was almost the same thing that happened. When we were expecting a joint report between MINTEC and NEXA specific law with Kitlapela, they brought complete two separate reports. Now, the reason I'm starting with this thing is that in as much as we continue, but please, let that not happen again. We wrote the letter, and I have, when we sent it to the department, that we expect to be briefed by the department on the financial sustainability of the three entities. Now, my main worry is that when I looked at the presentation, it is more of a presentation from the entities about their own financial sustainability, which means, in essence, we have got three presentations by each entity. I'm not going to close it, but having said so, the time now is 8 minutes. It's what it says mine. So I'll use mine. It says 9 minutes after now. I'm giving you up until 5 to 10 with all those three presentations. You will see how do you handle them so that members can deliberate thoroughly from what emanates. So it's by 10 past you must be starting. The floor is yours.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning to the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, all the chairpersons of our entities that will be presenting today. We have Monica Lidingwana, who is the chairperson of the State Diamond Trader, and also Dr. Thapelo Mtshudi, who is the chairperson of NNR. We have Mr. Abim Komezulu, the chairperson of the regulator. And greetings to all the DDGs, CEOs, chief directors, the support staff to the parliament and also ministry and the representative of the Minerals Council and our media in attendance. Chair, I just want also to submit an apology for the minister. In fact, both myself and the minister were supposed to be in cabinet committee right now. And so the minister is there and he has tendered his apology. Chair, I'm not going to waste time with the opening remarks. I think because of time, with the three presentations that we are having, I'm going to hand over, because in terms of order, we'll start with the State Diamond Trader. I must apologize, Chair, again, maybe the president, but we have taken note of that. We will make sure that we improve. But then the department will come in at the end just to confirm the support that we are giving to all these entities to deal with the challenges. But then in their presentations as well, they've got specific interventions which have been discussed and, you know, the department has been briefed and we have also made our input as the department in those interventions. I'm now going to hand over. Now, in terms of the process or procedure, colleagues, you are going to have 15 minutes to make your presentation. Noted, 15 minutes for a presentation, and I'm going to stop you if you go beyond 15 minutes. And the chairpersons of entities, they must just come in immediately. I won't be able to, you know, invite you to come in so that we can be able to save time because the chairpersons, they would introduce the presentations and after their CEO will take over. Thank you very much. We'll start with the trader. Over to you, Mayor Kalidimwan.
Thank you, DG. Good morning. Morning, colleagues, and greetings to the chair of the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Losipo. And all honorable members, the DG and your staff, colleagues and chairs from the other state agencies, all protocol observed. Chair, we made a presentation to yourself yesterday, and I'd like to propose that in the light of the limited time that you have just been referring to, that we skip a lot of what appears in the presentation. In fact, we agreed so with the staff yesterday. So we will probably be beginning from, say, about page 17, the CEO and the CFO will advise, but a lot of them we will be skipping in the interest of time because we just shared them with you yesterday. Chair, I apologize. I'm connecting from my phone. My laptop is off today, so I will not be showing my picture. But I think from the, say, diamond trader, it will be the CFO that will be making the presentation. And as I mentioned, she will be skipping a lot of the pages, but she will direct us from time to time. Chair, just my general remarks. I do agree with you that perhaps from on the basis of what we're going to be tabling today, we are more or less scheduling, presenting the challenges that we have. And we do look to the department and the DG to assist us with a plan to be able to overcome the challenges that we have. So far, we've been relying quite a lot on the reserve that we have to augment our shortfall from year to year. And I have asked the CFO yesterday during our preparation discussions for her to be able to to indicate as she presents with regard to when these reserves will be coming to an end. So the state diamond trader is quite in a dire situation with regard to financing, and we do look to the department. We've got some suggestions, but we do look to the department to assist. Chair, I think from my side, I'll leave it here and look to the CEO to direct. I think it will be the CFO presenting. Over to you, CEO. Thank you. CEO, if you're not available, can the CFO from the State Diamond Trader present, please?
Good morning, everyone. Due for the sake of time, I would request that we start from the past 10 years financial performance.
Sorry, CFO, you have many gadgets that are using in the same room. Can you mute your speakers?
Thank you, DG. We have muted now. If you can scroll down for me to the past 10 years financial performance, so that we start there, we just go straight to the financial performance of SDT. Thank you. On the slides for the profitability, it just showed the summary for the past 10 years. You will notice that FDT has made a loss in the past 10 years four times. However, in 1920, we had a significant loss due to the depressed global economy and weak market condition. As a result, we had to tap to our cash reserves. Next slide, please. With regards to our operating cost, our operating cost has remained consistent throughout the past 10 years. We had a slight increase over the past 10 years, and mainly 50% of our operating costs relate to employees. If we may go to the next slide. This relates to our sales for the last 10 years. Sales have been declining from 2018 due to weak market condition, and also the 1920 as well. We had the lowest sales ever since existence. This was due to the production level, which has been declining from the producers, and also that our about only 15 producers were compliant with law in 1920. Can you move to our next slide, please? This is our cash reserve for the last 10 years. We've been noticing that our cash flow has been declining. However, we've had a significant decline in 1920 due to the loss that was made, as our gross profit could not cover all our operating expenditure. So we have to use 75% of our cash reserve to cover our expenditure. And also the high increase in 2019 was due to the income receiving advance of about 48 million. The summary, I've covered a lot of the things in the summary, just to indicate here that our gross margin has remained stable at 3%. However, in 1920, we only have the gross margin of 2%. We can move to the next slide. This is the budget for 2021, which is the financial period that we're currently in. The budget was adjusted in July due to COVID-19. The main thing that affected the budget, or the changes in the budget, is that FDT did not make any sales in April and May at all. As a result, we had to adjust our budget and reduce it. For the first 2 months, we had to use our cash reserves to cover our operational costs 100%. So that is our budget. If we may move to the next slide. Chairperson, this is the summary for the financial performance. We've included our actual up to September. SDT, the sales has improved as the country eased the lockdown restriction. As a result, up to September, we made a sales of about 176 million. And our forecast up to the financial year end in March, we forecasting that we'll make a sales of 612. However, it should be noted that we are still anticipating to make a loss of about 3.5 million as our gross profit as well is not enough to cover our operating cost. If we can move to our next slide. This one speaks to our cash flow projection. As our gross margin could not cover 100% of our operation expenditure, we will be using our cash to cover part of our expenditure, and we anticipating that we probably have 16 million at the end of the financial period, that is March. It should be noted that the 16 million is not going to be enough to cover our operational costs in the new year should the entity not make any sales in the first few months, which raises the issue of going concern. If we put, thank you. Now, Chairperson, this is our projected sales per month. So from April to September is the actuals. And you could see that from April to and May, there was no sales at all. However, we're anticipating that we'll make some sales in the next few months. And in October, we did make quite a lot of sales. If we can move to our next slide. Next slide, please. Yeah. Another thing that we have to try to improve our cash flow, we had to sell some old stock that has been sitting in our books for almost 3 years now. However, we sold that stock at a loss to improve our cash flow. This is the cash projection for the next, yes, the cash flow projection, that's fine, for the next 4 years. The profit and, can you go back to the profit and loss projection first? This is our projection for the next 4 years. And you could see that as much as we anticipating that we'll make some revenue or sales, however, our gross profit is not adequate enough to cover our operational cost. As a result, the entity is anticipating to make loss throughout the years for the next financial period. And then on the next slide, where we cover the cash flow projection. Our cash flow projection, we expect that they will be declining throughout the year as we don't have enough gross profit to cover the operational cost. So just to indicate, Chair, again, or to emphasize that should we not make any sales, as the sales are the projected sales, our cash projection will not be adequate to sustain the entity to find the operational cost. You can move to the next one, to the challenges and intervention. One of the biggest challenge that we currently have from 2018-19 is that the entity does not have access to credit facility, and it affects how we procure our diamonds. And also the entity is not getting any funding from the fiscals, as we are listed as a Schedule 3. As a result, we rely only on loan funding, which is costly. The past few years when we were using the ITC, the interest rate that we used to pay was prime plus 2%, which is quite costly for the entity. The entity rely on the pre-finance for the large purchases, as the cash reserve are not adequate to cover acquisition. As I've earlier indicated, that our cash reserves at the end of the financial period would be about 16 million. So that is just for operational costs. There's nothing to cover our purchases for the diamonds, especially for the primary location. Our margin is kept between 1 to 5%, and for the past few years we've been keeping to 3% due to the market condition. The projected cash flow at year end are not enough to cover the operational costs for the next financial period should the entity not make any sales, which indicate the going concern challenges. And then our annual overheads for the current year is 22 million. It ranges between 22 to 26 million for the next financial period. With regards to the intervention that we came up with is the ITC credit facility. We did start the process. However, ITC requires us to get an approval from the department. So we are still in discussion with the department or the shareholder to finalize for us to obtain the access to the credit facility. And also, another thing that we need, if maybe there will be changes as we are listed as Schedule 3B, so that we can obtain some funds from the fiscals just to cover, even if it's not 100%, just part of our operational costs. We also looking to revise the business case together with the financial model of the entity, and also to review the gross margin rate, as they are quite low and they can't cover our operational costs. We're working on the revenue enhancement plan, which we believe that it might try to improve our sales or revenue. And also we want to develop and maintain relation with other African diamond producing countries for exchange, just to exchange ideas. and as a long-term strategy, maybe to trade with them. And the last one is just to review the legislation and the regulation, as I think it was also indicated mm-hmm. yesterday. That's all from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG and colleagues. Thanks very much for the opportunity that the committee has given us to do this presentation. As a board of the South African Diamond Precious Metal Regulator, we only assumed our duties on the 1st of November, and we found this bus already starting moving. So we are just leading the bus at this stage. The presentation will be led by the CEO or the CFO, who in a nutshell will tell us who the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator is, what are the problems that we're experiencing, and what have we done about the problems that we are experiencing financially, and then give suggestions that will need the committee's indulgence on short-term resolution, medium-term resolution, and long-term resolution. Thanks very much, Chair, for the opportunity. Again, I'll hand over to the staff that is led by the CEO and the CFO. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Board Chair, and greetings to you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Chairs and CEOs of entities and colleagues at large. We'll quickly scan through our core business to understand who we are. May we go to the next slide, please? And as a Schedule 3A entity, we are funded through a grant, and we are empowered to generate additional income and surrender profits to National Treasury. And I should mention that over the years, we have been funded just over 50%, and the rest was generated from sale of services. So we relied on retained surpluses to cover any shortfalls. Next slide, please. This slide is actually showing the nature of the business that we do, mainly licensing and inspections, as well as diamond trade. Now, in this next slide, you will see that due to the nature of our business, which involves inspections and monitoring and enforcement, employee costs take the largest chunk of the budget. Now, what we are proposing is an exemption on VAT on imports that is actually stifling cash flows of our industry. The South African automotive industry has flourished and was sustained due to this type of incentive. Therefore, we are also proposing a similar arrangement for the diamond and precious metals industry. And we are also proposing introducing other minerals into the current mix in order to add more value. Next slide, please. So basically, the problems that we are challenged with is revenue from sales that has reduced by 8.8%, and our projected revenue is just over 50% of the budget. Now, one other challenge is that we'll be relocating to the OR Tambo International Airport as a special economic zone, and that will require funding. Next slide, please. I have indicated that employee costs amount to about 75% of our operational expenditure. Yet, year on year, we have been directed to cut our budget by 5%, so our grant has been reduced over time. And despite the austerity measures that we have implemented, we are still projecting a deficit of 22.5 million. I think I can allow the CFO to take us through the specific financials and the recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Good morning to you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, DG, and colleagues in the portfolio. I'm on slide 9 of the presentation. The slide depicts the difference between our grant allocation and our total expenditure. The slide is very important because we are supposed to be predominantly funded by appropriations from government, So it actually highlights the huge gap between what we're actually receiving from government in terms of a grant allocation versus our total expenditure. So we augment the difference with revenue generated in-house. We can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so this is another slide that talks to the same challenge or predicament. Historically, our total income, which is revenue together with grants received from government, up until 1920, it was sufficient to cover our total expenditure. If you look at the budgeted figures for 2021, we had projected that our total income or earnings would be more than expenditure, but when we proceed to the next slide, it will give you an indication that that is not the case at the moment. Our total earnings are not actually what they are supposed to be in terms of our budget. So during the 1920 financial year, we experienced a decline in revenue due to the decline in the industry. And obviously in the 2021 financial year, it's been exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. So you see the decline from the 1819 year in terms of revenue generation. It's been declining consistently to 1920. It's 46.6, then it goes to 42.2. Then during the first 6 months of the current financial year, at the end of September, we were sitting on a measly 14 million, which was basically 15% of what we budgeted for the first 6 months. Then the projections up until the end of 2021, the end of the financial year, is 26.7 million, which is just above 50% of the annual budget that we had approved for the year. So we can proceed to the next slide. Obviously, the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic causing this decline in revenue. So this is a slide that depicts the surpluses that we've generated over the past couple of years. So this is based on the accrual income statement. So it's accrued income, accrued expenditure. If you look from 1617 up until 1920, you see a decline. 1819, we did very well in terms of generation of revenue. Then we saw the decline in 1920 in terms of revenue. So revenue was almost equal to expenditure in 1920. So we had a small surplus of 1.6 million. In 2021, due to the fact that we are not generating revenue, our expenditure is basically projected to be more than the revenue we're generating, resulting in a deficit of 22.5 million, which is projected for the end of the financial year. We've implemented austerity measures, and I'll talk to that a bit later when we get to the expenditure slide. If one looks at the cash and cash equivalents over the years, that's the actual cash in the bank, the cash that we need to actually defray our expenditure. From 1819 financial year, it was sitting at 27 million. It's the year when the revenue was high, but also at the same time, when you go to 1920, you see the decline in the cash in the bank. We were utilizing our cash reserves to fund our operational activities due to the decline in the revenue. And if you look at September 2020, it's sitting at 12 million. And then the projections for 2021 at the end of March, the financial year, we go into an overdraft of 16.8 million, which is not allowed in terms of the PFMA. Just to emphasize and note for the committee purposes, our cash and cash equivalents are subject to approval for retention by National Treasury. We have not received that approval as yet. We require or need that approval of these reserves to actually assist us in basically paying for the commitments that were incurred at the end of March 2020. So we're waiting anxiously for that approval, and we hope it comes through. This depicts what the CEO has alluded to in the earlier slides, the actual financial position half year during the 2021 financial year at the end of September. If you look at the revenue line items, you can see the variances are very huge. We are way below budget in terms of the revenue generation, which is a huge concern for us. The outlook up until the end of March 2021 is not good as well. It's just under 26 million. Then if you look at the expenditure, the biggest cost we're carrying is employee costs, which actually exacerbates our problems. So we are projecting a deficit of 22.5 million at the end of March 2021. For the first 6 months, we're sitting on a deficit of 2.2 million. We can proceed to the next slide. So this just gives some insight into the pattern in terms of earnings versus total expenditure. From 1819, you see that our total earnings is more than expenditure. As we progress to the current financial year, our expenditure is more than our revenue. No entity can survive in that particular position. and hence we require assistance. Just to note that we've implemented austerity measures with regards to expenditure line items. We've achieved some savings in this regard. We've also had to sacrifice annual increases at a senior manager level and also at an executive level for 2 years in a row in order to keep the entity sustainable. If we can move to the next slide, please. Okay, so this depicts your cash generated from operations. So it's highlighting that at the end of September 2020, which is the first 6 months of the current financial year, we've had a small, can we call it income, coming from your cash generated from operations, meaning revenue was slightly more than what we paid to our suppliers and employees. What we project for March 2021 is an outflow, meaning that our revenue is way less than what we're going to pay to our suppliers and to employees, to the extent of a negative 27 million, which obviously cannot sustain the organization. We can move to the next slide, please. Okay, so the austerity measures that we've implemented resulted in a saving of 9.4 million. So the detail is reflected on the slide, and we are ensuring that we continue and maintain and entrench a culture of maybe of cutting costs in when it comes to certain expenditure items like international travel, et cetera. So we can proceed to the next slide, please, in order to remain sustainable. The initiatives implemented by the organization to remain sustainable and ensure its going concern ability. We are utilizing our reserves, but obviously that's not sustainable into the future. Our reserves, as reflected on the cash and cash equivalent slide, are depleting. We're sitting on 12 million at the moment. Then I've mentioned that we've taken a for not being allocated salary increases at an executive level. We are in the process of finalizing the revision of our tariff structure. It's been put on hold because of the COVID-19 pandemic and the fact that the industry was not doing too well, so we did not want to further burden them with increased tariffs. But now that it's back to normal, we will be implementing the revised tariff structure. Then there's a turnaround strategy we've initiated to look at the obtaining the optimal resource requirements for the organization or in order to manage your costs that we're incurring, especially the major fixed cost expenditure on our income statement. Recommendations to deal with the financial challenges, the interventions we require from the various stakeholders that are basically in the portfolio. The short term is obviously to assist us in closing the gap with regard to the shortfall in revenue generation to the extent of 24.4 million, and also to assist us in funding the move to the GIDZ. We are using our reserves to fund operational expenditure. As a result, we are falling short in having sufficient reserves to fund our capital acquisitions. We are on the accrual basis. We need our surplus, which is your cash and cash equivalents, to actually fund CAPEX. We do not budget for CAPEX on the income statement. We budget for depreciation. As a result, due to the fact that we're using our reserves to fund our operational expenditure, we've got insufficient cash to fund our actual capital acquisitions, which are required for the move to the GIDZ. So we need intervention in that regard or assistance. If in the event we do not get that assistance, the only alternative we have is to utilize our safety net. We've got an investment sitting at a standard. It's ring-fenced for specific purposes, but we would be forced to tap into it. It's not even sufficient to cover the total shortfall of 40.2 million. It's sitting at 35 million. And if we utilize that safety net, we will go into going concern problems, sustainability issues as a result. And then for the medium term, that is next year, we're asking for the department to look at the reprioritization of MTF allocations, where we are basically having cash flow challenges to take us into consideration as an entity and to assist us in that regard. And also the appropriations that we receive from government. We are looking for an increase in those appropriations. Is not sufficient. The gap between the grant allocation and the total expenditure is very huge, and it cannot be closed by revenue generated in-house. And then obviously, if in the event we have surplus funds, it's subject to approval for retention by Treasury, otherwise we surrender to the revenue fund. And then we require assistance in fast-tracking approval of the tariffs, and the long-term, and then obviously the rationalization of the entity, we would require assistance depending on the outcome. It's still a and a project that's underway. The outcome thereof uncertain at the moment, but we will share the outcome with the department and the portfolio committee and seek assistance if necessary. And then the long-term initiatives is obviously we're looking at amending our Precious Metals Act to include provisions that allow for charging of tariffs. We require assistance there to fast track and also approval in that regard. To include provisions that will allow charging of tariffs for precious metals similar or equivalent to those charged to the diamond industry. And the last one being inclusion of other minerals besides diamonds and precious metals, example your scrap metals. This would resolve quite a number of challenges in the industry relating to illicit trading and loss of revenue. Those are our initiatives that we've implemented and the interventions that we seek from the various shareholders in the portfolio. I thank you, and we will take questions. Thank you so much, Chairperson and members of the committee.
Thank you, CFO. Dr. Tapele Mchudi.
Thank you, DG. Good morning, everyone. I'm joined on the call by the CEO, Dr. Jobeka, and the CFO as well, Mr. Dakalo. I won't say much, but you'll see that in our presentation, the key focus will be focusing on attaining optimal funding proportions between state funding and the license fees. Mr. Dakalo, please continue the presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Honorable Members, Representatives of the Board, CEO, EG, all protocol observed. I think with the time given, we will move quite fast. The focus of our presentation is indeed on the funding model, and our presentation therefore will cover that, and the trend analysis will just illustrate how are the patterns of our financial collections and how the structure of funding prevailing in the previous financial year, and then we will go to areas where we think we have got a potential to generate some revenue to augment the funding structure.
There is unpalatable noise feedback that is coming from you. Can you try to
I'm not sure, maybe if I use am I audible better now?
You are audible, but that sound, I think it is disturbing, and so
remember. Okay, maybe then I can't, let me switch it off. Okay, I hope it's better now, DG.
Yes, proceed.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, so if we can go to the next slide. We do have a funding model that the NNR implements at the current moment, but we have, and it is supported by the NNR, and I will deal with it in the next slide. But we have done benchmarking of how the funding models work, mainly for organizations that are like us. And in the main, the focus of the models are supporting the operational independence of the nuclear regulators. As you know, this is one of the most important tenets of nuclear regulators, independence. And then the other thing that they focus on a lot is scalability and ability to react to changes in demand. Now, here in South Africa, we're talking about the potential new bill soon. So the ability of the funding model to be able to change with the new requirements as the industry changes is very important for us. Of course, the nuclear business have a lot of political and legal issues, and therefore the model has to be able to support those kind of requirements as and when they are required. Can we go to the next slide? So the current funding model that we have in terms of the NNR Act 17, the NNR can raise funds from four areas, mainly money appropriated by Parliament, application of application fee for granting authorization, annual nuclear authorization fee, and the last one, which is donations and contributions received as approved by the Minister. But on the two, on the four methods of funding, there are only two that we can control. And that is the money appropriated by Parliament and the annual nuclear authorization. Because those we can be able to charge and we can be able to increase the rate and so on. And the application fee, we can't do much about it because that talks to a situation wherein an industry player approach you for you to I have no idea, DG, I have no idea right now indeed as to what exactly that means. Because in my office is completely quiet. So I'm not sure if my speech is audible enough for us to be able to continue if I can get an in.
CFO, I have indicated that I tried to address it without disrupting your presentation. Proceed with the presentation.
Okay. Yes. So those are the two variables we can be able to control. So the state can be able to guarantee a certain portion of payment that is going to be provided to the National Nuclear Regulator, and we can be able to control how we increase or stabilize the issue of annual nuclear authorization. We will talk about the donations and contributions received as approved by the minister as we go through. But Chair, over the years, money appropriated by Parliament has been about 20% and less. And in the recent years, we have seen it declining significantly. If you can go to the next one. So here, we just want to show the trends analysis of the number of licensees that we have in terms of a certificate of registration. You will see there that in 2018-19, which was a bit of our peak, we had about 163 licensees. And at the current moment, that number has declined significantly to about 119. And we can't rule out COVID-19 as well, because we have seen this situation worsening in the country. Next slide. In this current slide, we are just trying to show the different categories of our licenses or authorization, with category one being the lowest category, which we charge annually to regulate about 62,000, and then category two being the second tier, charged about 77,000, and category three being the middle tier, which we charge about 136,000, going up to category five, which we charge about 1.1 million. So those are the trends of how the different categories of licenses are behaving in the previous five financial years. And Chair, it is a concern that in the main you can see that there is majority of those regulators of the categories are seeing a downward trend. But of course, the fact that the lowest categories are the worst affected, it does to a certain extent neutralize the situation, because as much as their numbers are way bigger, their contribution to the corpus are reasonably. The next slide, please. So here we are showing, Chair, the trends that we have seen with the emergence of COVID-19 and the economic difficulties that we have seen in our country. You see there that at our best times in 2018-19, we were able to collect our debtors by about 40 days. And in the current financial year, we are sitting at a projected collection turnaround time of 82 days, meaning that we have doubled. Now, this goes to show that our licensees are feeling the pressure out there, and therefore, because the NNR operates on an actual cash flow basis, this gives us a bit of a problem in terms of the cash we retain at hand and whether we are able to meet our financial obligations. As a Section 3A entity, we are not allowed to raise overdrafts and things such as loans, and as a result, we always guard our cash to be always adequate to cover our expenses. Go to the next slide. So that is just a provision for our bad debts. You can see it is a concerning spike that we are having in the current moment. But of course, the figure that we have there in 2021 is still a projection. But if it was to materialize, it will be very problematic, because you can see that it spikes something like three times our normal average, which was sitting at about 3,000,055 in 2018. So we can go to the next slide. And this is the fees increased analysis on the previous financial years. Also, as you can see, when you go to the next slide, Chair, please, you will see there that what is important is to realize that the rate of increase in the decline, and in the current financial year, we've been projecting at about 5.6%, but the indication that it came from the department in the current financial year is that they are consulting treasury on an amount of about 4.5%. Now, this is a point of view. Go to the next slide, please. Yes. So here we show the average contribution of different income streams. Now, the average contribution of the authorization fees right now is sitting at 75%. Application fees are about 8%, government grants at 14%. And this is the area that we need to focus on in the main, the authorization fees at 75% and the government grants at 14%. As I've indicated, these are the two streams that we can control. And the application fees we can't control. And the other income as well, we can't control. So on our proposal here, we're proposing that the two areas that we can be able to control should be fixed in a way that they are able to be predictable, so much that we can be able to give assurance to our industry of what to expect as far as fees are concerned in future coming years as we project. The next slide. So the fourth stream, which is income received as approved by the ministry, we have been doing established a center which we call the Center for Nuclear Safety and Security. This center's main objective is to conduct education and training, regulatory research, and technical and scientific support. As you'll realize, Chair, the NNR is a scientific regulator. So all our work is science-based, and as a result, the research that we put into that scientific stream of our employees, of students we can train from the scratch, is very important for the NNR to continuously have possible employees. But now we have seen a potential here, Chair, wherein we have got a lot of international organizations and some of the sister regulators in Africa who are contacting us to assist them with some of their processes. And we think with that process, Chair, we can be able to generate minimal revenue, which can be able to supplement our research development environment and our training environment, so much that it's no longer going to be a bigger burden to our fiscal. It can be augmented by the minimal revenue that we generate from. Go to the next slide. Yes, so on our recommendation, Chair, we are saying that in terms of our analysis and the review of our structure, if government was to fix the government grant to 82% and we raised 8% from the regulatory fee, which is inclusive of the authorization fees and the application fees, this model, Chair, will work very well in terms of us making certainty in the industry, and it will allow us to be able to be agile and be able to move as and when the applications, maybe, for instance, right now on the new build, we will be able to have sufficient resources to be able to do the pre-licensing work without necessarily having to request a special grant from government ETC, like we've done with the previous license of state tax. Now, the other recommendation is that regulatory fees should be due and payable at the beginning of the financial year, mainly because, Chair, we operate on active cash flow, a real-time cash flow environment. So our act right now does not specify as to whether the fees are payable in the beginning of the year or at the end of the financial year. It just refers to them as annual authorization fees. Now, this creates a problem because some of the licensees might choose to say, I will pay on the 31st of March, which is the end of the financial year. It's an annual authorization fee, and it's not have an exact date to be paid. Now, the CNSS, as I've spoken about it in the previous slide, if it were empowered by the minister to continue dealing with this prospecting as to whether this can be a feasible area of generating revenue, it can be able to alleviate the pressure on the research and development part of our funding requirements. And the other thing here is that the regulator should at least be allowed to keep some certain quantum of surplus for the retention. This is mainly based on the fact that the regulator have no intention to generate profit. And the money that we have that might be a surplus that we want to retain, essentially it has came from the industry and it should be redeployed to improve the regulatory, the industry regulatory framework and be able to make sure that the regulator is pushing to an extent that if there are new bigger applications coming on stream, we are then able to attend to them without requesting any different intervention financially from the. I thank you very much, Chair, and apologies for the noise interfering badly on.
Thank you very much, CEO, and also to the chairperson, all the chairpersons actually, and the CEOs. Chair, we have come to the end of our presentations, but from the side of the department, I just want to make a few comments. We are working together with our entities in resolving the challenges that they are faced with. Some of the challenges, as we are all aware, they are outside our reach. We need to engage the external players like the National Treasury. Now, we have looked into this matter even when we were preparing for the submission when the budgets were being reduced. We did actually present our case, but we are resuscitating the discussions with the National Treasury. Now, Chair and honorable members, if you look at the regulator, they do have some reserves, but then those reserves will never be able to sustain them. And now it will require us to come up with a plan. I must also confirm to the chair and honorable members that we have been having constant discussions with the regulator, and we are hoping that we will be able to find a solution to some of the challenges that they are faced with. Now, the other issue that we must also take note of is that when you look at the state diamond trader, yes, indeed, there is a need for the review of its mandate and also the operating model, given the declining market. And now we know that they are serving mainly our BEEs or the BEE industry. And so it has been declining as well. And now this is becoming unsustainable to the state diamond trader. Now, as for the NNRs, we really appreciate the approach that the management together with the board they have put in place, because they are only proposing a funding model that will strike a balance between license fees and also the fiscal allocation. And now these are ongoing discussions that we continue to have. And we strongly believe that this would help the regulator, you know, to sustain itself. And so that would be our take, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you very much. I would like to hand over back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, DG.
I'm still alive, Chair. Thank you.
Glad that you are no longer the president and CEO now. You are the chair. Congratulations. Yes, I didn't know.
Thanks, Chair. I've been demoted to be a chair.
I didn't know. Okay. Honorable members, fortunately, Ulanga today is not present, so I wouldn't make a mistake of not with him struggling to raise his hand today. There is a presentation. I'll talk to to you and to the DG when members would have made a comment on how you are making or you have made your work very difficult when it was not supposed to be. Honorable members, I see the hand of Honorable Mylan, Honorable Volmarans, Honorable Phillips, Honorable Malinga. Let me check, am I correct, Mylan? Volmarans. Okay, Honorable, I think I've got only four hands for now. That is Honorable Mylem, Honorable Volmarans, Honorable Phillips, and then Honorable Malinga. Honorable Mylem.
Thank you, Chairperson. And Chairperson, let me thank the presenters for the presentations. There seems to be a common theme through all three presentations, and that is about profitability and sustainability over the short term. And let me start with the state diamond trader. They're projecting a loss for the next 4 years. So I have a couple of questions for each of them. The first one to the state trader is your gross margin percentage of 3%. How does that compare to the private sector? What are the margins in the private sector? Secondly, you spoke about the need for a credit facility, and yet just a year ago you were sitting on cash reserves of 100 million rand. Why are you not using your reserves to fund your acquisitions? Why are you seeking expensive credit? Particularly given your financial situation is going to be incredibly expensive, why are you seeking credit when you could have been using your reserves? Then, based on those profitability projections, the loss for the next 4 years, why should this entity be kept going? What are we accomplishing by pouring money into an entity that is losing money hand over fist? And related to that, why should government keep putting money into that entity? If we can move to the Diamonds and Precious Metals Regulator, my first question is why the big jump in employee costs? You increased by about 11% plus over one financial year, and I'd really like to understand what the cause of that is. I'd also like to know the number of employees at the Precious Metals Regulator. Then, with relation to your move to GIDZ at a cost of 15.8 million rand, I have to question, is it necessary at the cost? I mean, can you keep operating without making that move? Because it seems to me that you're investing in a massive capital expenditure that at this stage the regulator cannot afford. My next comment kind of cuts across all three, and that is the retention percentage or the retention of surpluses. And I think this is something that we can certainly push harder for, particularly if we want entities to be self-sustaining. I think that we need to be negotiating with National Treasury that these kind of entities, and particularly State Diamond Trader, needs to be self-sufficient and not reliant on grant funding. So I don't think we should be looking at changing the status of the State Diamond Trader, but the retention percentage or the retention of surpluses is certainly something that we could be looking at. Still with the Precious Metals Regulator, where are scrap metals currently regulated, and why should this be moved into the Precious Metals Regulator? I get that you're looking for more revenue streams, but I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't fit with your mandate at all to have the regulation of scrap metal dealt with by the precious metals regulator, unless you're talking about scrap gold and the like. But if you're talking about rusty old cars and bits of ironwork and things like that, I think that we need to seriously consider whether that's within the mandate of the SAD PMR. Then lastly, with regard to the NNR, I think that first of all, I've already spoken about the retention, but I think that your comment about the day or the date when fees are due and payable is quite telling, because what's stopping the NNR from billing on the first day of the year? And you can't say it's the regulation or the legislation. The legislation says that there's an annual fee, but the actual operational date of the billing, that's in your hands. So what's stopping you from billing on the first day of the year? Let me leave it there for now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, Honorable Volmaran.
Thanks, Chairperson, and greeting to all members and colleagues who are in the meeting. I think, Chair, I first welcome the presentations and the interventions that they seek. To a large extent, my observations and comments, including questions, are a stark reflection of a carbon copy of what Mr. Honorable Malem just said, that all three entities mostly suffer from the same type of environment. When you look firstly at the diamond trader, you can see that they are trying to tell us in no uncertain terms that one, they are getting depleted. They are operating mostly from their reserves so far. And it also goes to the other entities. The trader is operating at 50% of the cost being to employees. The sales have declined. The environment, and that is exacerbated by your COVID. And there's one glimmer from the diamond trader that says just when the regulations were starting to be relaxed, they got a bit of activity with the projection of their sales. But being as it is, they still encounter challenges, including the raising of a credit. Now, in their intervention specifically, they mentioned that there is a discussion between the IDC and the department with regard to them going through the process of either getting some credit or so. I want to find out how far is it, what is happening, what is hampering it. And across all three of them, whatever the races, the department is mentioned in terms of helping them either with a review of legislation and or getting some more money, save for all the issues that relate to staff, that relate to the declining environment and the declining commodities. Now, I want to find out from the department as well, either what is hampering it, why don't they prioritize some of the issues that might make their entities to survive financially? Because the department is not coming clear on exactly what are they doing in regard to the other sister departments where they have got a leverage in terms of negotiating. I want to agree as well, Chairperson, because they all say there is an approval that is needed when they've got to use the money that has accrued to them as a surplus. And they deposit it into National Treasury. And when they expect a grant of 82% or 20%, you find that they get 14 to 16% of what would make them sustainable. And surely then it makes an interesting argument for their survival to retain without necessarily having to go through the red tape of seeking approval or a certain percentage of what they have generated for them to be sustainable. Another one is your on the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator. There is a slide that's slide 17. They said that there were employee cost which was saved, which amounted to 6.5 million. Apart from the staff not taking an increase, what do they attribute to this big number to? If you look at that slide, there's a number of amounts which are less than a million rand, and in this case, they have managed to save in excess of 6 million. And what would be, apart from the increments, what would be the method that they use to get to such an amount? I suppose nobody might have also lost their jobs in that encounter. And their intervention with all the other state stakeholders. So, my points were mostly on the surplus, that they must be given leverage, or department must negotiate on their part to retain as much as possible for their survival. There's not much that they can do with the economic outlook and the declining in the mineral sector where they find themselves. But by and large, those were my comments and questions, Chairperson. Thanks.
Hello, Phillips.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for the presentation. I just have a few questions to all the entities that presented. I'd just like to know whether the omission of the AG's report from your reports is because it hasn't yet been audited by the AG. If it has been, can we please have copies of his report on what you've reported on? And then on the precious metals regulator, how many applications do you get or have you got in the last 18 months, and how many have you turned down and for what reasons? Thank you so much.
Okay, Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to yourself, members of the Portfolio Committee, the department is led by Advocate Mgwena, CEOs and CFOs and all members of the board from the three entities and our table staff. Chairperson, actually, I don't have questions. I just have comments for the three entities. Chair, let me commend the appointment of women as CFOs because we are good to have a budget. I am hoping, Chair, that they are well treated as we begin the 16 days of activism to no violence against women and children, that the males, male counterparts that they work with, they give them the respect that they deserve. Chairperson, from what we have heard from all the three entities is that they request the shareholder to speak on their behalf or the shareholder to assist them to get the National Treasury to increase their appropriations, Chair. I think they have good ideas or ways on how to keep their businesses afloat, Chair. But of all the three entities, Chair, I think SDT is the most hit hard, is the hard hit one or from the presentations that we got. Chairperson, let me also welcome the cutting down of bonuses from DPMR for senior management to show that they are serious about trying to keep their finances in order, Chair. So my question, Chair, what will happen to SDT as they anticipate a loss for 4 years. How will they augment that, and how will they operate with the anticipated loss for over 4 years? Thank you very much, Chair.
I'll come back later, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We'll start with the trader, after it will be regulator and the, precious metals regulator, and it will be followed by the NNR. Over to you, CEOs.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Honorable Members, for all your questions. I will let the people that know best to tackle some of these questions. I do have a few remarks to make, though. With regard to the questions posed by Honorable Kevin Milham, he is asking whether the gross margin that we have, or rather how the gross margin that we have compares to the private sector. I'm not quite sure if the question is on profitability. And if it is, I am also just further not sure whether as a Schedule 3B entity we're expected to be profitable. Self-sustaining, definitely yes, we're expected to be, but profitability, I'm not so sure. So I leave it to the CFO to help us with regards to that one. And also to address the question of why we are not using the reserves and seeking credit. My understanding, quite briefly, is that we've been using both until now, but the entity will clarify. I am most interested, Chairperson, to the question that was that came from Honorable Milham about why we are retaining, or we have to retain, the state diamond trader in the face of the losses that we are making. Now, where I sit, the state diamond trader is one of the very important institutions of government. It has a specific mandate to buy and sell rough diamonds for local beneficiation, just to mention one of the mandates. Now, this one, I think it is the mandate that resonates with a lot of South Africans as we sit now. I think we are all aware of the sorry state that our local beneficiation has been over the years. But if the Honorable Member is perhaps positing, Chairperson, that we would be happy with our minerals, raw minerals being exported and coming back in the form of finished products that are unaffordable to purchase from South Africans' point of view, then we can perhaps agree that perhaps this institution doesn't have a place for staying open. But I doubt that many South Africans would agree on that. I definitely am one of those that would not agree that I want the minerals from South Africa to be exported and come back unaffordable in terms of the finished product. And if that is the case, then there is a lot of reason for the state diamond trader to continue to exist. Now, that's the fact that we have not yet made perhaps much progress with regards to achieving this very honorable mandate of access, promoting access to local beneficiation, mean that this institution should be closed. I do not think so, Chairperson. I think all it means is that all stakeholders must seriously come to the table and consider the options, and that we need to continue to try and try even harder to make this institution achieve its very important mandate of making RAF available to local beneficiaries. Now, Chair, I want to note the comments from Honorable Valencia about the appointment of women, and pledge that we will try our best to support them. And also thank her for making the statement and the observation that the State Diamond Trader is the most hard hit. I have not been able to compare yet, but I welcome that observation from her, and do hope that Advocate Mogwena did note that, and that the State Diamond Trader will be the first one in terms of being assisted, because as the Honorable Member has noted, it is the most hard hit. Now, I will leave it to the CFO Chairperson to address the question of how we're going to be operating with anticipated four-year loss that she has projected. And also, I think maybe the CEO might want to say something about the omission of the AG's report from our presentation today. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I'll leave it there for now.
Chairperson, Conrad Ross, Operations Manager, and I think just in relation to the question around how we compare with the gross margin percentage compared to the private sector, Bain & Company has done an analysis on this globally, and have actually looked at the whole pipeline, and have looked at the fact that your double-digit profitability has made within your mining sector and your retail, and where State Diamond Trader sits, which is a trader, a dealer, the average percentage that is attained globally is between 1 to 5%.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll just like to address the question that relate to the 99 million that we had in our bank and in 2019. So the reason why in 2019 we had 99 million in the bank is just because we have received an income receiving advance where a payment was made for the diamond of a sale of diamond, and it was only delivered in the following financial period. So in terms of the accounting standard, we had to record that one as an income received in advance and also recognize it in our cash and bank. And also we had our creditors of about 10 million. And that 99 million was also used to fund the loss that we've made of 16 million. I think it should also be noted that so far, we've never received any funding from Fiscus or from the department. So we're just operating based on our sales that we made on the rough diamonds. Another question that was raised by the Honorable Member, it was with regards to the access to credit facility. We're still in discussion with the department. We submitted the information that is required by the IDC, so we'll continue to engage with the department to finalize the approval process. The last one, it was with regards to how are we going to sustain ourselves while we're making a loss. I think when you look at our intervention, that is why we spoke about maybe we need to change, we propose the change in the legislation and also get some fiscals, some financial support from the fiscals so that we can get some funding to cover part of our operational cost so that the entity can be sustainable. That's all from me, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. From my side, I just want to add a few things. One of the questions that was posed by Honorable William in terms of the credit facility was why don't we use our reserve for purchases? We normally do that, but at some stage,
we find that some patterns, the value of the patterns are huge, especially when we have a parcel from the producers which are over 60 million, 100 million. Then our reserves cannot cater for that. So basically, that's a revolving credit. It's a facility that we use as and when there's a need. It's not that we use it every day, but when, as when there's a need, then we tap into that facility. And we normally pay within 10 days in terms of the agreement that we had previously with the ITC, and at the rate that is about 2% over prime. So basically, that's what we are doing. That's the first question that I wanted to share, indicate. The issue of the AG report, we're not expected today to present the report. The report is available, is ready. When the committee require that we present, we will definitely do that, Chair. But for this session, we're only focusing on financial sustainability as we were required to do that, Chair. Thanks very much. These are few comments that we can, or answers that we can give, Chair.
Thank you very much, regulator.
Thanks, DG and Chair. Chair, I'll take the first step in trying to answer some of the questions, and then management will take over the question that I haven't answered. The first one that I'll try to answer is on the cost of movement, as raised by Honorable Member Mele. Our lease where we are is coming to an end. And I don't know whether members have ever visited the place where the SADP, where the regulator is. It's horrible. It's got its own risk, to an extent that we are spending some money on having our own security, because the owners of the establishment have removed their security. It's not a good place to be at for dealing with diamonds. It's no more the jewelry city that it was about 5-6 years ago. So it's a very risky area. We just have to move. Whether we like it or not, we just have to move. We'll have to make means of moving. And if you look at our reserves would have been almost sufficient for us to go on. The problem is that, the major problem is that we have to move. And if members can visit the place, they'll also agree with me that this is not a place where you expect to be dealing in diamonds. In the city center, and the area has been converted to business area for shops and things like that. It's becoming very, very dangerous. Although even in the past, there are members of the organization that were nearly hijacked moving out from the offices. So it's not a good place to be at. The second one that I'll partly deal with, but I'll ask management to further emphasize it, is the issue on scrap metal. I would like to go slightly backwards. In the past, there were two legislations. There was the Diamond Act dealing with diamonds and the Precious Metals Act dealing with the precious metals. At that time, the precious metals were defined as PGM, gold, and silver. And when the Precious Metals Act was amended and the regulator established, we removed the part of silver because of the dollar price of the silver. Okay, it was very low, and there was, and even now, not worth it to manage something that is at a lower price. However, if you look at our suggestion now, we are not saying this is something that we making an example with scrap metals. We're not saying that we want to get to scrap metals immediately, but it should be considered that currently any scrap that is precious metals, we are still responsible for it. And then the other scrap metals is the SAPS that is responsible for it. So it's a dual type of engagement that is there as far as scrap metals is concerned. And our suggestion is, which is long term, we say maybe the act needs to be amended. We're not saying there are precious metals, we deal only with precious metals going forward. We're asking that this should be amended so that it involves scrap metals. We all know the problems in our country as far as scrap metals are concerned. And if ever it's only one body that is responsible for scrap metals, we think it's not a matter of economics only. We think the problems that are there in scrap metals industry, will be minimized. So we're not thinking about our self-finances only, but we're thinking for the sake of the country in controlling the scrap metal industry. We all know the problems that are in the scrap metal industry. That one dealt with that. And the next one I wanted to deal with is Honorable Phillips. You mentioned issues about auditing, whether this is why this is not presented. The instruction didn't include that, but in our case, at any rate, we've got clean audit. So I hope you'll congratulate us for having a clean audit. The last one, I would like to appreciate what Umam Malinga has said in commending our management, the sacrifices that they made of not taking any increase in salaries. It's really commendable. I'm very thankful that, ma'am, you have realized that, because these are type of encouragement that you should make to the employees of the state. And then, Chairperson, if you can allow me to be just naughty a bit and go back to the, I know I'm not supposed to, but please, I plead with you, because I think this is a major problem that I've been seeing that members are not aware of as far as the state diamond trader is concerned. We should be aware that the state diamond trader is classified as a 3B, and we are classified as 3A, and which means our operation model are totally different. However, the major problem that has happened from the first day when the state diamond trader was initiated is that state diamond trader never received any appropriation from the state. State diamond trader, for it to open, had to go to the IDC and the private sector banks to be funded. So the state diamond trader, unlike other 3B organizations of the state, which were funded, which are funded by appropriation, the state diamond trader had to go on its own and behave like any other business, like my own private business that I would open. I would go to the IDC and the banks to get funding. So I think always at the back of our minds, we should remember that story, how the state diamond trader started. It's its own appropriation from the state, although it's called the state diamond trader. It started with its own funding from day one. So we should be able to understand that. I think that one was important. That's why I felt I should just address this. Employee cost jump and the number of applications, I think those are executive matters that can be answered by the executives. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll go to the issue of the number of applications received. If you look at our annual report for 2019-2020, you will note that we received 333 diamond license applications, as well as 280 for precious metals. And what we do as a regulator is, when people don't comply, we try by all means to engage them to understand their challenges and assist and try to consider all the issues. In cases where licenses applications are refused, it's very rare occasions where there's clearly lack of compliance with the minimum requirements of the Act. And I can actually count them with my hand to say these are the number of licenses that have been refused in the past few months. But the GM regulatory compliance will actually give us the figures and break it down a little bit. On the issue of employee costs, the GM corporate services will take us through, just give us a little bit of a breakdown on what happened over the years that led to the savings. Thank you. Dr. Linka?
Okay. Thank you, CEO, and good morning to the chair, the members of the committee, and colleagues. I will answer on the licenses. We have, in the period under review, we have issued 613 licenses, of which 333 were for diamonds and 280 for precious metals. And out of the 333 of diamonds, 148 were secondary licenses, which means
authorized reps, for instance, and endorsements, which are change of addresses, change of names, etc. like that, and then the export permits. Under precious metals, the 280, we had 96 endorsements on that side. So that makes the 613 licenses that we've issued. And the declines are most, we had very few declines, and mostly they are based on maybe precious metals approvals, export approvals, because they do not meet the local demand, or maybe there's no activity, refining activity. Also on diamonds, because they don't meet the 80-20 rule, which means they have to beneficiate 80% before they can export the 20%. And also declines can be on anomalies found on registers if we feel there are valid reasons, maybe for maybe suspicious activities, we decline and do inspections and investigations. Thank you.
Okay, in and out.
Thank you very much.
Unmute, Doc.
GM Corporate Services, are you there?
Yes, CEO, I'm here.
Please go ahead.
Good. Okay. CEO. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the PPC, the DG Chairpersons and colleagues. With regards to the staff costs or employee costs within the regulator, firstly, the regulator has got 119 employees. Of the 119 employees, 99 are based in Johannesburg, and we've got 8 in Kimberley, and KZN and Cape Town, they've got 1 employee each in each region. The bulk of the licenses, as per the presentation by the General Manager, Regulatory Compliance, are in Gauteng. So the 99 employees that I spoke about are actually based in Gauteng to actually service all other provinces that I did not mention. So the nature of the organization is that regulation requires a lot of physical interaction of our employees with licensees in the form of licensing, whether it's renewals or new applications, walk-ins or send via emails. And then inspections for both diamonds and precious metals. So the employees will be going physically to the premises of licensees to actually conduct inspections in terms of legislation. And then we also have employees that are specifically appointed to deal with transformation. They are also required to actually go physically to the premises of licensees to verify the compliance levels of those licensees in terms of the Mining Charter 2018. And then we also have a component that is called a Diamond Exchange and Export Center. There's employees that are actually physically facilitating diamond tenders, as well as facilitating and processing exports and imports of diamonds. And the last one we have, government diamond valuators. They actually go to premises and such as the ODPS and value diamonds. And when the diamonds are coming to the DEC, they are the ones that actually have to do the physical verification of the market value of those particular diamonds. So those are the dynamics that we have within the regulator. And then obviously we have your support services, which support the core that I've just mentioned. The employee costs over the years, the major changer was actually the cost of living adjustment for employees below senior management. These are the collective bargaining level employees that received salary increases over the financial year. The savings that were mentioned were coming out from the vacancies that we have in the regulator. So what happened is the men ex coaches, the management executive committee, took a decision that every time when there's a vacancy, because of our dire financial situation, we're not just going to fill all the vacancies. We need to check whether we can do without that particular vacancy, or we can transfer that particular function into another division so that it's carried out, and then we save money from that particular perspective. So over the period, we have had some vacancies, and those particular vacancies were not filled immediately. Only strategic and necessary critical positions were filled. Like in the previous financial year, the position of the CEO and CFO was amongst those positions and those positions were only filled from the 1st of July 2019. So that also contributed to the salary saving costs that you saw in the presentation. Thank you, Chair and the CEO.
You are done, yeah?
Yes, we're done, Chair, as far as the regulator is concerned. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Gomezulu. Over to you, Dr. Bismarck, NNR.
Thank you, DG Committee. Question was posed by Honorable Mylan on why we are not invoicing. Once is that in terms of, we actually aim to do that all the time, but the problem becomes the fact that the authorization fees must be gazetted by government, and that happens after a consultation between the Minister of Mineral Regulations and the Minister of Finance concur on what the board of the NNR. Now, that does not always happen on time because of the back and forth that must happen. And in fact, as we speak now, we still do not have gazetted fees for the financial year that we're in, because we're late because of the midterm, the budget adjustment that had to be done by the Minister of Finance. It's not only us who determines the process. The process is for multiple role players, mainly political principals, offices that need to finally agree with what the board has proposed. Then we can invoice the authorization holders, the license holders. So if everything was to go smooth, we would be able to invoice them on day one of the new financial. It doesn't happen. That's what's always putting us. That is the response to that. But I just wanted to make a comment also on the issue of scrap dealers and to bring to the attention of scrap metals, to bring to the attention of this company. By the way, the National Nuclear Regulator also regulates scrap metals. Because as you can imagine, some of the scrap may be radioactive. So we always have to be there to ensure that whatever is being deemed scrap metal, it is clean so that it does not contaminate the environment and it does not actually put lives in danger. So we are also part of the regulation. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you very much, Doc. You have responded to the questions, but I'm sure members struggled in capturing some of the responses. But we'll hear from the chair and members if maybe they would want to have further clarity from your side. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We have tried to respond to all the questions. Over to you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DG. I see you had Honorable Mylan. Let me just start with this thing, DG. It might help so that again it doesn't happen. Please, for the sake of this exercise, must check the correspondence that was forwarded for the month of November, which ends at that time with today. And what was supposed to happen. I'm saying this thing, DG, with, because next time we're not going to be that much kindly. The difficult, that's why I said when I was opening, I said, I can sense the problem or the difficulty. And I think the State Diamond Trader, for instance, they found themselves having to answer a question that to me required to be answered by the department. Don't think the question was necessarily wrong. If it's a state entity, generally the process of budgeting in the state is that Treasury regulation says that you can't budget on a deficit. From the point you work on your budget, you are budgeting on a projection of a loss. But it will be difficult for the state diamond trader because its existence is subject to the shareholder. Now, that is why the brief was saying the department must brief the committee on the issue of financial sustainability of the entity. It can't be the entities who must justify their existence. It should be the department that says the entities have got problems here and here, and this is what the department to assist them who are doing. Now, in this case, it's entities, and the worst thing they do, and I don't think it's their problem, the worst thing they do is that they then plead with the shareholder in the meeting of the oversight. The role of this committee is to do oversight. So all what they are pleading, it's what should have been responded by the department as a shareholder on behalf of the state, as state entities, to say, this is what we have done based on 1, 2, 3. So I request now, next time, please, when the correspondence is sent, so that we can feel as a committee that the committee is taken serious. People must, then you must, it may not be necessarily your fault, DJ. Unfortunately, when they say you are a director general, it means you are the chief accounting officer. Zonke zono, namafuna okulokuba okwenza yini izandla zothintwa zibandla zonke, even nezinye zothothi masezithinta zinekorona okanye zizini. Unfortunately, that's the duty of a chief accounting officer. So my request, please, make sure that whoever is handling what is going to come to the committee, it is precise to the press. Because my fear now is that we'll end up engaging entities on matters that, in my view, should have happened. The second thing, I request that consider having some of the meetings. You know, I don't have a right sitting here to say who must respond, but I'm a very observant person. And which is why sometimes meetings can take too long. To all of you CEOs, and I'm not saying if you want to do it that way, continue to do so, but be careful to leave a certain image that may not be correct. You are the accounting officers. I've said this thing to you, that in some case when I was sitting in one board, I used to say, the CEO must come to the meeting. The next person that I could sympathize or be prepared to is a chief financial officer who understands, or a chief operations officer. But the rest of the people are what you are supposed as an accounting officer to be knowing by head. So look at your delegation and even the delegation of power, how deep it should go. And I'm saying this also to you, chairperson of the entity. that devolution, too much devolution of power, can render that the person cannot, does not know what is happening on the institution that is in charge of, especially for a chief accounting officer, in this case, in an entity, the CEO. So I'm just raising these things with you so that we don't come back tomorrow and have a similar problem. The third point, Honorable Phillips, is that the reason we had raised this issue is that when we are dealing with the audit outcomes, amongst other issues that was clear was the question, was the issues that were raised by the AG, which we then said that we need to understand the current state of some of this. NNR, the Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator, and the State Diamond Trader had audit outcomes, but there were specific areas that were identified, which is why we then said the department must be able and come and deal with the issue of their financial sustainability. I thought I must outline those few issues, those three issues, so that it can be understood in the context. So there is an audit outcome. We have dealt with the audit outcome, even of the State Diamond Trader, is there from the AG. The only entities, to be specific, with two and three, is the SEF and NERSA, as well as the, what is this, NERSA. I think those were the three that I can recall just from my head that had not been, the AG is still having outstanding audit outcomes on them. So I think I just wanted to make that point that we would have appreciated that there is a consolidated report of the department on the issue of financial sustainability of the entity, so that from where we sit as a committee, we can be able to see that there are interventions that are being made, whether there are challenges or not. I thought I must lay that foundation before I go back to you, Honorable Mylem. Is there any other follow-up? Okay, Honorable Mylem.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've just got a couple of follow-ups. The first is for the State Diamond Trader. They indicated that the range of gross margin percentage is between 1% and 5% globally for people in their particular category of operations. Now, the follow-up is this. Why are they not looking at the upper end of that range if that is a global comparative? It would give them a more revenue stream, a bigger revenue stream, and it would make them a little bit more likely to be profitable. Then, Chair, I didn't get an answer on the big jump in employee costs. I think it went from 79 million to 88 million in just over 1 year at the Precious Metals Regulator. I got the number of employees, but I didn't get the reason why there was that jump in the employee costs. And then just while we're talking about the Precious Metals Regulator, the comment was made that they weren't asked to bring the AG's report, that they were asked to talk about the financial sustainability. And I just want to emphasize that the AG's report is a key document in helping us as a portfolio committee evaluate whether or not an entity is financially sustainable. We can see then how they are performing. We can see how their finances have been managed. And it would give us some insights into that. So I think it's very disingenuous to say, oh no, we were asked to talk about financial sustainability, so we didn't bring the AG's report. And I think that's something that we need to address. Then lastly, with regard to the NNR, Dr. Bismarck, I take your point about the regulatory framework, and I think this is something that we need to address. But I mean, I go back to the legislation, and I look at specifically Section 28 of the NNR Act. And I mean, it's very clear. It says the minister may, on recommendation of the board and in consultation with the Minister of Finance and by notice in the Gazette, determine fees payable to the regulator in respect of any application for the granting of a nuclear authorization and an annual nuclear authorization fee. So I think that you are 100% correct that needs to be addressed. But I don't read that, and maybe this is something that you could clarify for me. I don't read that as saying, well, he has to do that every single year. In other words, he could determine an annual nuclear authorization fee for the next 5 years now. So year one, it's 100 Rand, year two, it's 110 Rand, year three, it's 120 Rand, et cetera, and give you a long-term perspective. And I think that's something that we could look at as a way of possibly getting around amending the legislation and providing you with some kind of growth path that you could then put in and bill immediately on day one and not be sitting here we are at the end of November where you're not able to bill because you don't have an annual nuclear authorization fee. That said, Chair, I think that we do need to get the minister to address the fact as to why this annual nuclear authorization fee has not been gazetted yet. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Now DG, you will respond. I thought on that part, Honorable Nylam, although it may not be a satisfactory answer, which I was still trying to process in my mind, I thought the answer though was given about the employee cost that there were vacancies that existed, including that one of the CEO, which was only effected on the 1st of July 2019, including other critical posts that were not there before. But I'm not responding on behalf of the NDO. I might have had or needed to make a follow-up on the cost difference, of which that's I think your main question was on the cost difference. Even if you would have had those critical posts, probably would have had other people acting. Does that mean there is a huge gap between the one who's acting and the actual person who now gets appointed to the post on a fixed term? That could be the issue. I'm sure they will be able to elaborate the logic between the jump, not just necessarily so that we can see that the manner in which cost calculation is being done with regards to employee compensation, how is it done? DG, you will also, even if you like, respond on my grievances, because if I say it's a concern, the concern is just that we just note a concern in both words. So you can attend also to my grievances.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think the follow-up questions are only addressed to two entities, that is the regulator and the NNR. In that order, CEOs, then I will then deal with the last part. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. In relation to the question, why is the diamond traders not looking at the upper level? I think there's dynamics playing at play here. State diamond trader is a trader. It negotiates with the producers to actually acquire those rough diamonds. Over the 12 years of its existence, we actually reached the 5% gross margin percentage in 2011-2012 financial year. But of course, there's other dynamics that come into play. Supply and demand comes into play. Competition for rough comes into play. So those are the challenges that we, as a trader, face with. We will negotiate with the producer at the best possible way, and the same will apply to the clients. But the objective at all times is to gain as much profitability as possible from our acquisitions, keeping in mind that we are reliant on them for the commercial imperative side of the entity. Thank you, DG.
If I may come in on the regulator, Chair. Just like you, I thought the answer has been answered on the jump in the employee costs, so I won't go back to it. But I'll ask management to add if there's anything to add, but I think the question was answered. On the issues of audits, I think the honorable member, maybe I speak too fast, missed the issue that I made mention that we had a clean audit for the latest audit that was done. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair DG. If I may add to Mr. Honorable Mylam's question, I think it's important to note that there's not actually been a big jump in employee costs. In fact, there's been a reduction in terms of a grant coupled with a reduction of about 8% in revenue from service fees. That has resulted in a shrinkage in operational costs. That is the ratio of your employee costs versus other costs will always be affected due to that over the past few years. And we should also note that executives have had a 0% increase in the past 2 years. Only employees at bargaining level, employees below management, received an average increase of about 8% in the past, and then recently we have only agreed on a 4% increase. So the figures that we have are not actually indicative of a high jump. In fact, it's a reduction in revenue that shows this imbalance. Thank you, Chair.
CEO Chairperson, it's the CFO of the regulator, the SADPMR.
Proceed, Madam.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just to assist with regard to the question regarding the increase in the employee costs, just a note on the slide, the 88 million that the honorable member is referring to as compared to the 79 million of last year, the actual expenditure. So the 79 million is last year's actual, 1920. The 88 million that is on the slide is actually a forecasted figure. It's a projection. It's not an actual. So included in that 88 million, which is a projection, is obviously a provision for 12-month salary for your senior executives like the CEO, the CFO. Last year, we commenced employment in July. So this year, we are basically included in that projection for a full 12 months. So it has an effect because our salaries are a bit higher in comparison to junior staff. In addition to that, we've also included a 4% increase for juniors. So from deputy manager level downwards, we've included a 4% increase in your salaries. And obviously, we've had to factor in back pay as well. And then we've factored in the salary costs for your vacant executive positions, like your GM regulatory compliance, your company secretary, et cetera. We factored it in because the recruitment process has been undertaken and it's in the process of being finalized. So those full employee cost packages have been factored into that projection for salary costs. Also, just to note that it includes a leave provision as well. You'll see on that slide, we've classified the expenditure according to economic classification. So employee costs is holistic or inclusive of all your different aspects of employee costs, including your leave provision. So that is also included in there. It's about over 2 million as well. So that makes up your 11% increase from your actual of last year, which is the 1920 year, to the projected figure of 88 million. So it's a projection. We are trying our best to curb those costs. As mentioned during the presentation, we've implemented austerity measures. We have a moratorium in place. Any position becomes vacant, and which is not critical to the organization, we've taken a decision not to fill those positions. So we are hoping that that 88 million does not materialize due to the efforts that we're putting in place to actually reduce that figure. So I hope that answers the question, Honourable Member. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we are done. Doc, we covered.
Yes. Thank you very much, DG. To respond again to Honorable Mainan. Indeed, your proposal or suggestion that we go for a multi-year approval of authorization give me very peaceful mind. But we've tried that 3 years ago and discussed that with the department, and it turned out that we probably do not read the provision, the act, in the same way. So we are willing to go back and discuss it because it would really give us a lot of certainty, you know, get that multi-year approval, perhaps three years, still giving the minister some leeway to change an already approved authorization fee. If, for example, certain economic problems in the country may arise, for example, like COVID, where you have to change the budget of the country from the approved one. But I definitely think approval for the multi-year stabilize our finances.
Doc? Dr. Bismarck?
Yes, DG, I don't know if you captured me.
We have lost you there. I don't know if maybe it was only from my side. You.
Yes, I thought I was audible, but I was saying that we definitely would support a multi-year approval, as Honorable Mylan has suggested. We tried that 3 years ago, and we application of that provision from the NNR Act with the department. But I think we can still go back to the drawing board and discuss it because it would give us a lot of certainty in our planning horizon, at least for a three-year multi-year approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doc, and also the rest of the colleagues that have responded to the follow-up questions. Honorable Chair, to comment on your comments, I think you were charting a way forward on how do we need to relate to some of the issues that are coming from the portfolio committee. I must admit, Chair, we had a long journey this year. We have been doing very well with you as the PPC. All honorable members and yourself as the chairperson giving guidance every time where it is necessary. I think, Chair, here I must admit that we became just passive consumers of information. And this was never internalized properly because the briefing is quite clear, Chair, that it's a briefing by the department. We have then apportioned the responsibility now to the entities. I would like to tender a sincere apology for that, and we'll make sure that this does not happen again, Chair, moving forward. But I think I also wish to agree with you on the aspect that you have reiterated, especially from the entities, that they should have pleaded with us on what they are. They have pleaded with the PPC, but we will deal with that. I have been having some interactions with SOE's Chief Directorate and the CFO as well on a proper alignment in dealing with the entities, especially when it comes to areas of finances. And so I can assure the honorable members and yourself, Chair, that come next year, things will be in much better shape, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I think it's for just for us to implement the guidance that you have provided to the department. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you, DG. Thank you, honorable members. From time to time, we'll interact and times we are going to be a little bit firmer. We are not rough, we are firm, so that things can be done for future operations. Look, DG, I want to say as a summary version of this matter, that as you continue to work on your APTs, your budget, as well as your targets for the next financial year, which will require to be attended to this committee, please take into consideration today's engagement. These are questions that are necessarily going to be questions, in fact, as the committee are supposed to be engaging on, so that for future references and for future purposes, there can be no questions that are asked when we are no longer there. What was this committee of parliament doing if things were this way? So for whatever we do, and I must say I'm encouraged. Maybe that's the extra advantage I have. I'm encouraged with some of the entities, both on your energy portfolio and on your minerals portfolio. I'm encouraged when I look at the appointments that have been made. Some are on the basis of prior knowledge, some are on the basis of what we see and we get exposed to. But for those that we know and that we have seen, that we have experienced, there is only one thing that they can do now. Unfortunately, because our expectations or my expectations will be very high, the only thing they can do is to disappoint. So those that I've known and they've performed well in many areas that I've interacted with, they can only do one thing. Either they sustain what I know them of, or they surprise by showing that they can go much bigger than what is commonly known about them. And those that we don't know, they can only do one thing, maybe from our fear of not knowing them. Or they can also surprise us and show that this was a spot-on decision that was made with the appointment. I'm emphasizing this thing because we've got three entities here. There is one thing I must say, which is my parting shot on this matter, that under your stewardship, as board, the three chairpersons here, you cannot afford not to give us confidence that things are going to turn for the better. So on those bases, all what I'm encouraging you, do the best of the work, engage the shareholder. It will be nice when you come here and say, when we deal with some of the issues, to say, no, the issues you are raising, the chair and the members of the committee, are issues that even ourselves we have raised with the shareholder, but this is the way that the shareholder thinks. So I'm just encouraging you to work on this thing. We will most definitely, I think with the issues that members were raising, I think it will help members, even if it means from an administrative point of view, we must assist. That I'm reminded with the point that you have raised, that when we go for the budget, we must find a way. And I think now we all say this thing that we must have dealt with the issue of all the audit outcomes, so that they can inform our interaction with what will be proposed next year for the budget, APPs, and the annual targets. I don't want to go to what the SADPMR has raised, which is a point of concern that at times, with the cuts and everything, there is a risk, and I think you've confirmed today, that then you have to cut, and at times you cut where it is critical, certain programs that are critical. Those unfortunately are some of the things that we have to live with. So we will do our level best that when we go forward. The point, Honorable Malam, that I hope it will give you comfort is that we looked at the issues that we say will constitute the program of the committee. That issue that relates to the to any matter, including the nuclear bill or nuclear amendment bill, all those issues, I think they could be able to be accommodated on what we have proposed, including what you have suggested that needs to be given an attention. And we'll do our level best to make sure that most of these issues are dealt with within the first quarter of the year, if by that time there would be nothing that has been introduced. I think on that score, I must say, DG, I'm raising these issues because one day when you come here, and I must say this thing, one day when you come here, I don't want you to come here and then you are told, look, can you go back and do what was requested to be done? And then the committee doesn't work. But I really urge that there has to be a way of properly look at what is the brief of what the committee has done. On that note, honorable members, I think it is suffice to say that we have come to the conclusion of the item. And then let's meet next week, Tuesday. We have given you the report, honorable members. We, at the time, we had made a commitment. We thought that this is our last meeting for the year 2020. But having given a reprieve, please go and study the reports of our oversight visit to Mossel Bay, but also DG, we hope that we'll receive from yourselves and staff the briefing for Tuesday, and so that we meet on Tuesday and have our last meeting next week, Wednesday, including dealing with the minutes. Underscore, honorable members, the meeting stands adjourned. See you next week, Tuesday. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair.